X-Men. X-Men. X-Men.
Hello. Welcome to Comic Book Herald Live. Hey, everybody. I'm Dave Busing, founder and editor-in-chief of ComicBookHerald.com, host of Comic Book Herald Live on YouTube and podcasts, and wherever you get your streaming. I'm trying something new. Y'all in the chat here with me live today, first off, thanks for being here. Second off, you're going to have to let me know, are you seeing anything? Is this working? I have no idea. I'm trying something new to make it a little bit easier to stream with guests. I've been by myself for years now. I'm all alone, right? I've been pretty alone on these streams for a while. And while folks are often like, it's quite incredible that you can talk by yourself for an hour and a half about comics and be relatively coherent week after week after week, like folks definitely are giving me my flowers for that. Perhaps there's some monotony. Perhaps things could be easier in conversation. Certainly I have more fun. Not that I don't enjoy these, but I definitely have more fun doing the My Marvelous Year podcast with Zach and Charlotte, where I have some pals to chat with. Let's see. It says, you sound good here from Tyler. We got Pepto saying, only seeing you, but it's coming through clear. Okay, so is anyone getting audio and video? Is anyone pulled off that feat yet? I would love to hear from you as well. But yeah, so trying out StreamYard so that I can easily get guests on. Obviously, I've done streams. I did a stream last week, right, with Owen Likes Comics. Hope you all enjoyed that. Going deep on the Ultimate Universe. You can check it out on the CBH channel if you haven't already. But the way I've done it in the past is you got to get all these like technical hookups. And this should just be I give somebody a link. So if this goes okay, then tomorrow I will be using this to stream my interview with Brian Michael Bendis and Andre Lima Arejo here, a talk in Phenomena and their comics careers. So we'll be doing that on the CBH channel tomorrow afternoon. Listen, it's going to be a Friday afternoon. Some of y'all might have plans. I certainly don't. My ideal Friday evening, I order pizza. Kids go to bed on time, happily. And I read comics the rest of the night. That's just how I party. That's just how I rave on a Friday. Okay. But yeah, no, just a couple friends of mine joining tomorrow, Brian Michael Bendis and Andre Lima Arejo. How many friends do you have that you refer to exclusively with their birth certificate, their first, middle, and last name? How many friends in your inner circle do you name like they're an assassin? Like you have full name. Let's see. Dr. Evil Porkchop says, Brian Michael Friendis. Good point. Good point. One of my best 115 friends. Anyone who I have interviewed on Comic Book Herald Live, either on the podcast or on YouTube, is one of my closest friends in comics. So Brian Michael Bendis, this will be the second time that I've talked to him and Andre. The last time was when Phenomena Book 1 came out. This will be Book 2. But yeah, we'll talk Marvel. We'll talk Phenomena, their work together. I want to talk with Andre a little bit about he's got to deal with Giant Generator, Rick Remender's thing. If you don't know Andre Lee Marejo, you should. He did A Righteous Thirst for Vengeance with Rick Remender, which was one of my favorite books of the last couple of years. I honestly think he should probably win an Eisner for the work on Phenomena and A Righteous Thirst for Vengeance combined. There could be an Eisner in that individual's future. Banksy says, my best friend, Johnny Hickster. I cannot claim Jonathan Hickerman. As of yet, no interviews. So he cannot claim him as a friend. He's merely a peer. Oh, good one, Dave. Anyway, that'll be tomorrow. If this goes well, we're going to try it on here, see how this goes. Maybe I'll even, listen, if I like it, maybe I'll even pay and get rid of the Powered by StreamYard amateurish logo up in the corner. Replace that with the nice CBH logo. That is in play. I've also, listen, the guests, if this thing works, we got Brian Michael Bendis, Andre Limoreo tomorrow. The following week, possible special guest appearance from a previous guest that I've had on the channel, an individual who may even lurk among you in the comments many times. We're going to talk X-Men. We're going to talk Kurokawa. And then the week after that, it's not official yet, so I don't want to say. But let's just say the biggest name in comic book YouTubing wants to talk X-Men animated series. Let's just say that it would be very easy for me to explain to you who this individual might be, and we might be doing an X-Men 97 post-game show. Let's just say that that might be happening, hypothetically. That's 3 weeks in a row that I just laid out of very special guests coming on to the CBH channel. And then I don't even know where we're at time-wise, 3 weeks into the future. But at the end of the month, definitely, I have, we're going to do a Krakoa post game with Ernie from Blurred Without Fear. That's happening. We're going to do our final, one of my many joys of doing the YouTube stuff has been doing post-game and getting excited about X-Men comics with Ernie from Blurred Without Fear. We used to do it back with Verno from Cerebros and kind of lost touch there. But doing it with Ernie has been a pleasure. And he's awesome. Obviously, his channel's great, Blurred Without Fear. If you're not following it, you probably should be. You know, if you want to actually enjoy the handful of us who do this thing well. But yeah, so post-Krakoa, post-game with Ernie. That's a month full of guest stars, of stars, right? Xavier says, are you interviewing yourself in reaction to me saying I got the biggest name on YouTube? You know, here's the, you know I could. You know I could. I actually did. I clicked the I would need a second camera. If someone, you know what? I probably have a backup. That's a pretty good bet. If I got two cameras on myself, okay, and I was just doing the, you've got me interested. You have my attention. Okay, I'm thinking about it. Yeah, I'm just looking here through the live chat. Every guest has been guest so far. I won't say for sure, but you definitely got them all very, very quickly. But that's what's coming. That's what's coming in Comic Herald Live. It should be a good time. Should be a lot of fun. Just keep talking comics, having fun, digging into the work. Again, just looking to like keep this thing spicy, keep this thing fresh, as you know, the X-Men comics don't necessarily give us as much to dig into. But today we're going to dig in a little bit. Let's see. We got Rise of the Powers of 10 coverage and X-Men Forever number 2, because we did not talk about those with Owen. Last week we talked exclusively Ultimate Universe. So we're going to go into Rise of Powers 4 and X-Men Forever 2 from last week. We're going to talk this week's X-Men Gods from last week, talk a little Immortal Thor. And then let's see, we got some X-Men 97. We got a little X-Men 97 to chat about. Okay. On the personal front, I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. This past weekend was C2E2 here in Chicago, the big Chicago Comic Con. I worked all 3 days as a freelance writer and interviewer for Popverse. Check out thepopverse.com. They do some great reporting and work there. Big fan. I got to work with them. I got to tell you, like, just having invested a lot of myself into writing about comics and just loving this medium and the stories and the people who make them so much. Having that then pay off in such a way where I am extended paid offers to do that. Like, I don't know if any of you all have tried, but like getting actual compensation to write about comics is not a common thing. It is difficult. I was at Comic Book Herald when I was running criticism for, you know, for years, purely by the act of paying my writers, I was like well ahead of the curve. Okay. And my goal there was always I can pay CBR money or better. And I did that. And I'm very proud of that. But like just on a personal sort of like motivational level, like just someone being like, yeah, we will pay you a fair rate to spend your time at Comic-Con interviewing Chip Zdarsky about Batman. Like, come on. I love that. I love that for me. It makes me very happy. And the people there are awesome. They got a really good team, Popverse. So it was a good time. I got to interview Chip Zdarsky in person. I got to interview Brian Azzarello in person. We'll do some Az stories. I got some Azzarello stories for you. Okay. The interviews haven't gone up on Popverse yet. I'm still in the process of formally transcribing and putting those down, but we're going to need to talk about the Brian Azzarello interview. It went pretty well. But famously, has kind of a reputation as a cantankerous personality. Okay. And let's just say, I'm dropping that one a lot today. Let's just say Batman's dick came up. I gotta say, of the three professional interviews I did, two of the three involved Batman's dick. And I didn't have to bring it up. That's the thing I was proudest of. Okay. I just guided. I just put us around the crotch, right? I just gently put a hand on Batman's quad. I sidled up, and before you knew it, creators were saying Batnik. This is the, if you don't know what I'm talking about, I should probably just not explain it and just leave it. Like, that's, of course, I would talk about Batman's genitals. No, it's Batman Damned was the first DC Black Label book. And the thing that everyone remembers about it, and this is part of the issue that Mr. Azzarello has, is they showed a full frontal cloaked in shadow. Let's be honest. Like, if I was trying to like get excited about full frontal Batman, this is not the image I would do so with. But you know, technically it showed Batman's penis, and that probably has never been done. And that was like a thunderstorm of news. Okay. That was like that. And that's all, if you say Batman Damned, like that's the first thing that's going to pop into people's heads, creators, journalists, fans, whatever. Right. Okay. As Justin says here in the chat, it's a terrible dick, to be honest with you. There are much better dicks in Batman comics, right? Shouts to Richard Grayson. There are way better dicks throughout the history of Batman comics. It's not even the best one, but this is the one that got all of the attention, which, you know, as a dick is kind of what you want. But Mr. Azrael had words. So I'll share it once we get closer to publication. Nothing too newsy. I will say the Chip interview, he's super, super nice guy. I'd interviewed him once before for CBH via Zoom. It's the first time in person. And very generous with his time. Was everybody was super nice to me, honestly. But two things came out of the Chip interview that I thought were particularly interesting to me. The first one was, I don't want to say it yet because, again, it hasn't gone up on Popverse, but here are the clues I'll give you. And as you noticed earlier when I was giving my guest clues, I give clues to four-year-olds. So my clue giving will get you the answer, okay? if you think about it just a little bit. So one of the things that he dropped I thought was very interesting was related to the Ultimate Universe. And the second part of that clue that I'll give is this is not actually the first time he revealed it. It was revealed previously on a podcast. I just don't think anybody's written about it yet. But it was related to Marvel's new Ultimate Universe. And I found that very interesting. You're definitely going to see that story going up on Popverse. And then the second thing, and this one I'll just talk about. So I checked out on the Zdarsky Jorge Jimenez Batman run around just after this, like Gotham War. I didn't want to do a big Gotham crossover. I didn't want to bounce between Catwoman and the whole Bat family stuff. It just didn't appeal to me. So I checked out. I was like, you know, I'll catch up with it later, right? And then I'm coming up for this interview and I'm reading everything. I apparently like had a huge Brian Azzarello blind spot. So I'm trying to read all of 100 Bullets. I'm trying to read Moonshine. I'm reading Faithless, which are all really interesting comics. Highly recommend it. Eduardo Risso is awesome. Oh, man, he's so good. But then I'm also like, oh, I should catch up on Chip's Batman. Like, let me give it a go. I like the post-Gotham War Chip and Jorge Batman a lot more than I was enjoying the front half of that run. I think it's in pretty good shape, honestly. I like where it's at. And one thing I did not expect, and Chip confirmed this when we talked, is like, I didn't expect them to be doing a Three Jokers riff. Now, I am not alone in the, you know, critical community as someone who does not think highly of Geoff Johns and Jason Fabok's Three Jokers. I think it's actually like among my least favorite comics, not because it is so like actively offensive in and of itself, but like because of the hype and the profile. I mean, Johns for me is a creator who I haven't like truly enjoyed their stuff since like early New 52. That's just some of that's just my taste, right? But I think Three Jokers is, I think Johns is particularly ill-suited for Batman stories. His Batman work tends to really rub me the wrong way. I thought this as long ago as Green Lantern, where I was like, oh, he writes a bad Batman, but I'm really enjoying this Green Lantern run. Okay. But anyway, people love to hate Three Jokers. It's also just a goofy concept. Why do we need three? He's like the biggest, like you wouldn't do the Three Dooms, you know? Like you have one of the best villains in all superhero comics. Just let him be. But Zdarsky and Jimenez are running with Three Jokers. And what Chip revealed that I did not realize was Three Jokers by Johns and Fabok is not in continuity. Like that Three Jokers story is not in DC Universe continuity. It's a Black Label book. It took so long to come out that everyone's like wearing the wrong costumes, and like timeline wise, it's kind of hard to even peg it. So although it was teased in continuity with Metron or Batman in Metron's chair circa, what was the event? What was the event where Batman was in Metron's chair? Oh, I can't remember. Is it Convergence? Tom King was involved. Geoff Johns was involved. Regardless, Batman in Metron's chair was like big secret. Three Jokers. And this was like in the Ride to Doomsday clock. And anyway, the Black Label series is not actually the answer to that Three Jokers tease. Dark Side War. Thank you, Justin. Dark Side War. This is Chip and Jorge's Batman run right now is actually the response to Batman in Metron's chair circa Dark Side War saying, Three Jokers. That's happening now for the first time in universe, in continuity. I love that. That delights me. I find that that's like just one of the oddest, most joyful quirks of comics continuity. And like, it's not bad. I still don't like the concept that much. But this is a much better execution, I think. And Joker Year One is a much better story. So I realized I was not alone in folks who were like, hey, maybe I'll check out on Batman. I don't know if this is the run for me. Check back in post Gotham War. I had a better time than perhaps I expected. Okay. So seeing more of you pile in live. Thanks to all of you joining. You missed some sick teases about all the guests I have coming, including tomorrow afternoon, Brian Michael Bendis, Andre Lima Arejo. That's going to be here on the channel. If you like, subscribe, share, comment, all that stuff, perhaps you'll see it. We're talking like Friday afternoon. I think it's going to be like 2 central. It's going to be kind of weird timing because Brian's in Portland or West Coast and Andre's in Portugal and I'm in Chicago. So like making those time zones meet is Kang level time temporal manipulation. Okay. But I think we're going to do it. And we're going to try it here and we'll see if we can stream it live. If there's a problem, I'll panic and cancel the stream and maybe I'll just hang up on them and go hide in my room. I don't know. We'll see what happens, but we're going to try it. All right. What else do we got before we get into comics? X-Men 97. I caught up on 2 episodes today. What do you all think of X-Men 97? Who is brave enough, like I was after the first 2 episodes, who is brave enough to take the anti-97 stance. Not I. I'm having a pretty good time. It seems to be quite universally beloved. One of the best things I can say about it after two episodes, and this is like mildly spoilery. I predicted this after the first episode, or before the first episode. Okay, Dave Stinney called this shot months ago. So if you've been following me, it's not a spoiler. If you're paying attention, you watched last week's episode, it's not a spoiler. But like some of y'all might not realize. Okay, so maybe earmuffs for like 2 minutes. Okay, one of the best things you can say about X-Men 97 is it is making rereading Operation Zero Tolerance seem like a half-decent idea. That is such praise for X-Men 97, because I promise you, it is not a good idea to go back and reread Operation Zero Tolerance. Were I in a different phase of my life, I would definitely be doing that. I would definitely be like videoing about it and writing an essay and being, but then I'd have to read Operation Zero Tolerance. Tremendous blow to my mental health. The story sucks. It's not good. Don't pretend that it is. X-Men 97 is making something out of it. I love that. I love that for adaptations. I got chills multiple times watching today's episodes. Okay. Listen, I try not to get too horny on main. I think y'all know that about me. Obviously, I've been talking about bad dicks today, but I try not to get too horny on main. Nightcrawler holding three swords. That got me. That got me good. Sword in the tail. I got chills. I got chills there. I got chills with the Summers family. Maybe I'm just cold. I don't know. It's hot here. We got our AC on. I don't know what's going on. I got chills multiple times. The show's got me emotional. It's tapping into all the nostalgic vein. This show is like so wholly committed to being for like Disney adults. I saw someone call it today. It is. I mean, the show is 100% made for those of us who never move past, right? The Arrested Development still has us obsessing about X-Men. It is not for a new generation at all. I can see if you've got like a teenager, like a young teen, them being super into this. So maybe you're building kind of a new wave of fandom that way, potentially, right? But you're definitely not doing it any younger than that. Like, you know, I joked after the first couple of episodes how like I really wanted to watch this with my kids and they didn't want to watch. I'm so glad they did not want to watch. Like, in no world is this a show for my three boys. like definitely not for them. You know, it's for the Invincible crowd. Like I've been saying, like this is for the adults who watch animation. And it did remind me, it's this weird thing because we've been living through this moment where the MCU was so dominant for so long that it seemed like live action was like, you know, like we had crossed that hurdle, essentially. Because growing up, I mean, yes, I enjoyed the Raimi Spider-Mans. I enjoyed the first two X-Men movies. But it was always like animation is what I fell in love with. It was what I fell in love with first. Things like Spectacular Spider-Man, I absolutely adored. Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes was very exciting to me when that came out. Like I was always, Batman Beyond, like I was always more into animation. It always seemed closer to the comics. It always just seemed closer to what they were capable of and why I enjoy the superhero universes so much. And X-Men 97 is like, because it's not just X-Men 97, like it's on the wave of great TMNT animation, My Adventures with Superman, obviously Spider-Verse over the past 5 years. Like, you know, and I said this after the second Spider-Verse movie, I think I might just like animation better. You know, I think I'm kind of back to like, oh yeah, I do. It just kind of got pushed out by the success of the live action, you know? And when I say I like animation better, the thing that I've never been into is like the DC animated movies where they just adapt a thing that is a comic story that already exists. I've never enjoyed a single one of those. Marvel tried it for like a half a second with a Planet Hulk animation. And that's cool in terms of getting these stories in front of people who otherwise were not familiar with stories or hadn't read them or whatever. But as somebody who would much rather consume comics by reading comics, which I think is the best, I would argue, hot take, best way to read comics is to read comics. Those DC animated movies were just like, I had no interest, zero interest. So seeing X-Men 97 come back, it kind of just re-solidifies, like, I kind of just want to watch cartoons. I think I enjoy those more. Here's a question for you. Should live action Marvel Cinematic Universe be worried that X-Men 97 is too good? Should they be worried that X-Men 97 is too good? Because here's the thing that I kind of don't know they were counting on. I wonder if they're a little surprised. Like, they wanted X-Men 97 to be successful. Obviously, they wanted it to be a hit. But did they want it to be so universally beloved that going live action is just going to be a lesser version, or possibly have to, like, the internal competition of living up to the bar now of X-Men 97. So the question is, should live action MCU be worried that X-Men 97 is too good? We've got a split of yeses and nos right now in the chat. Just says MCU X-Men are cooked, which is, like, not a super uncommon, I think, line of thinking at this point. And I think, you know, the fear, like, certainly going into this, I would have been like, well, the last thing I want the Marvel Cinematic Universe to do is to just, like, adapt 90s X-Men, right? Like, I don't just want the nostalgia fest. I want them to do their own thing. That's going to be a lot harder now, I think. There's going to be more pressure, I suspect. Although, I do think that's very much an opinion of the moment. Right, because X-Men, like, this is the peak of X-Men 97 fever, is this first season. As we build toward a finish, they can only recapture this nostalgia once. Okay, it is peaking right now. They're not going to get more hype for an X-Men 97 with the season two. Season two might be really good. I hope that it is for my own viewing pleasure, but they're not going to get more nostalgic hype for the X-Men are back, baby, than they got right now. So I do think that as we get to, like, season two or a season three of an animated X-Men 97, diminishing returns, people are going to start to wane, I think, on the potential of what this even could be. That's my prediction. I will happily be proven wrong in it continuing to be excellent and innovative. But I would be surprised. And I think what's going to happen then is then that'll open the door to be like, yeah, let's get back to our bread and butter, our most financially lucrative thing, which is making movies starring, you know, mutants. Right. And then that door is going to be open. What are y'all saying? Rez says, I'm very tired of live action MCU. Truthfully. I mean, yeah. So is Kevin Feige. Right? That's why there's only Deadpool and Wolverine this year. You know, that's not an accident. Like, they recognize that. This is the year where they say, we know you're tired. Here's a nice X-Men cartoon. You know? Seen some people say that Justin says, those movies were never going to be good in regard to MCU X-Men. Oh, I don't believe that at all. I mean, from 2008 to 2019, everything the MCU adapted found the angle. Like, doubting the MCU from, like, especially from, like, 2014 to 2019 was insane. It only became even remotely plausible post-pandemic. And they spread themselves too thin with Disney Plus, and they ended the story is the thing, right? They ended their story with Endgame, and they ended it really well. But doubting them during that phase, you were always wrong. You know, so can they get back to that level of, like, understanding how to do these things with Fantastic Four and X-Men? I do believe it's possible. I do. I don't really subscribe to the idea that, like, they couldn't make a good X-Men movie, or like, oh, X-Men should be a show. It's so grand. Like, that's always a cop out. I think you could say that about anything. The idea, people have this idea with, like, fantasy and, like, you know, things with lots of lore where they're like, oh, that can't be a movie, it has to be a show. It's like, that's a huge cop out. Like, it's a different style of storytelling. You can make a good, look at Lord of the Rings, you can make a good movie with lots of lore and with lots of story, and you can make it so that little children like me will watch the extended cut over and over and over and over. It's just all about, right, who you get involved with that and if you've got a feel for the material. So I never buy that. And yeah, I definitely don't buy the idea that like they couldn't make good X-Men movies. They can and they will. I would anticipate, you know, but I do wonder now if people are going to be like, yeah, but it wasn't as good as animated series, you know, episode number 5. The part of the reason I think the animated series is going to decline too is like, you can kind of only do a decimation once. Tell that to the X-Men comics, right? They've been trying over and over. They just did it again in X-Men Forever. We'll talk about that today. But you can kind of only pull that trigger once. And they did it. And it got a huge response. And people didn't see it coming. And we will remember it. But it's, I don't know if they can go back to that well. Let's see. What are the people saying? Xavier says, how many seasons of 97 would it take to catch up to the present? Well, at their current 1 year per season pace, it's 2024. It'd be 27 years. We get 27 seasons of X-Men 97. Let's see. Tevia says, personally, I want more Marvel animation. That is the other piece of X-Men 97 that I did not know I would be feeling, is I am in that boat as well. I think Marvel can do animation very well if they invest in it and if they care to, you know? And I think the big thing with 97 will be like, how do they view this as a you know, an earner, essentially? Because it's a much muddier picture than their movies, right? With Disney Plus subscriptions and all those things. So like, how do they view investing in other good animation? Because like Marvel Animation right now, you got Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. They did amazing work with. You got X-Men 97 coming in hot. Like, they're on a hot streak, you know? Will they see the value in that enough to keep pumping those out? I kind of hope that they do. Let's see. Rez says Bue was fired because of abuse workplace, apparently. I was asking about that this weekend at C2E2 because, so you got Bue DeMayo was the showrunner on X-Men 97 and unceremoniously fired like days before the first episode dropped. Like right before, you know, you'd be going heavy into promotion and interviews and talking to this individual. And kind of just unprecedented and weird move by Disney, but there were like no details available. So if anyone has any sourcing, you're saying abusive workplace, if you have any sourcing on that, I'd love to see it. But everyone I talked to was like, we don't know. And I talked to some pretty credible people. So I don't actually know. There are a lot of assumptions. There are a lot of rumors. There are a lot of guesses. I would be very skeptical of all of those because I don't think anything official, unless it dropped like today, and maybe it did, I don't know. I'd be very skeptical of people saying they know why he was fired, because that does not seem to be public information at this time. I mean, you know, because the thing is, like, if the show is so, that's the other piece, is like the show is so good and so competent that obviously now you have fans being like, well, whatever it was, bring him back, you know? And it's easy to get in that mindset, but it's also like, okay, but no, let's hear what it was. Like before we're like, yeah, season 2, let's go. Like, get some details. You might look like an idiot for saying that, you know? Let's see. JJ says, now Spider-Man 97 needs to happen. Does it? Does it though? Like, that's the thing, is like, more animation, yes. More nostalgia pulls? No. That's not what I want. They're getting away with it on X-Men 97. They are. I will throw in the towel that they have gotten away with the nostalgia baiting on X-Men 97. They made it work. Like, huge shouts to everyone involved. Animators, writers, everybody made that work. Just make a good Spider-Man animation. It does not need to be set in 1997. There is no value in going back to the Spider-Man cartoon. It is not. Listen, I loved it. Probably as much or more than just about anybody. But no. No, don't do that. Absolutely not. I would much rather see fresh. Spider-Man, I get the only argument against that that I will hear today in my court is the shared universe potential of these things crossing over, right? Like, listen, we got a little Doctor Doom today. You throw me some Fantastic Four 97, and that means I get more Doctor Doom in my life. I'm open to the idea. I'm open to the idea. Michael says Fantastic Four is make or break for MCU, in my opinion. It's not. I know it feels that way, but X-Men is. It's X-Men. Fantastic Four could still suck, and it would just be Fantastic Four sucking again. And it would also, it'd be bad, obviously. And I hope that doesn't happen, right? It would be very bad for Marvel, but they still are sitting on X-Men. And because Fantastic Four has had limited to no sex. Listen, if you don't have success in your movies, you don't get to have sex, right? Sorry, Ben. Sorry, Reed. Sorry, Johnny, Sue. I know you're getting it with Namor, but like, you're not allowed that if you're not rolling in the dollars, right? That's why I don't have sex, because I do things like rolling in the dollars. Like I said, I'm very much alone on these podcasts. No, I think it's Fantastic Four could bomb. It could bomb, and they're still sitting on X-Men. And you always want to be sitting on an X-Men. Let's see. What other questions do we got? Just says, has Moon Girl gotten season 3 confirmed yet? Well, season 2 hasn't come out, to my knowledge. So usually it happens then. So I hope that happens. Xavier says, Bew is a French name pronounced Beau. Thank you. Knew there was no way I was saying that. What's Boo? How would you spell that, right? I'm saying you a boo thing. I do things, girl. Yeah, I have a TikTok. I know the kids' songs. How do I spell Beau then? So much lingo I got to keep up with. Everyone correct me on my pronunciations and lingo here in the chat. Please, genuinely would love to know more. All right, keep your questions coming. Keep your thoughts. We're going to talk a little bit of comics here. Pepto says, speaking of Doom, I was surprised he was working with Bastion. I was not. Doom will work with whoever suits him. He's a baddie. I love Dr. Doom, but it is, I think people often are like, oh, he's so noble and, he would never do anything wrong. And it's like, no, he's a supervillain. Of course he'll work with Bastion if you think it benefits him. It's great. I like his interpretation of Bastion. Also, the biggest thing that I liked was hearing that voice and being like, damn it, I know this voice. I cannot place it. Who is voicing Bastion? And I looked it up, and it's the douchey hot guy from White Lotus. Probably other things, but that's where I know him from. What a pull, right? To get somebody who, like, people will know, but not where it's like distracting, right? It's not Benedict Cumberbatch doing like a Bastion. Benedict Cumberbatchian, as we call him in these circles. Oh, I forgot. Oh, I did the wrong song. I'll save it. I was going to do a Bastion-based opening. Tevi asks, question, how do you think Gambit will return? Mon ami, will he return? You can't bring him back for a minute. Do not bring that man back for a minute. Okay? Let's let some emotion sit. If they bring him back, it will be Apocalypse. It will be the Horseman. That has been done before. There is comics reference. And they haven't done really any Apocalypse stuff this season. Apocalypse was huge in the actual original 90s series. I think that will be it. Listen, that is a Dave Stinney lock that if we bring Gambit back, it will be Horseman Apocalypse stuff. Okay. Xavier says, where can we send you things? Also, can we send you things? Is this a thing YouTubers do? Did I just refer to myself as a YouTuber for the first time? That's concerning. We gotta take a few steps back on this question. You can send me things at cons. Like, I was at C2E2 this weekend. I'll be there again next year. Like, come to C2E2 and send me anything you want. As far as like mailing address, I'm not just gonna like give out my mailing address. If enough people volunteer, thank you for a generous thought, I suspect. If enough people are like, I want to send you cool stuff, maybe I'll like do a P.O. box or something. But right now, that's not a thing that I have. You don't need to send me a thing. I like being here and I appreciate you being here. And it's, you know, that is the support that I need. Tevi says Dr. Doom is a jerk, immediately followed by Dow saying Doom is funny. Controversy brewing. Brewing. I haven't read Bloodhound yet. I'm seeing some Bloodhound references. I like Jed MacKay. I like Pepe LaRoz. I like Marta Gracia. I have no interest in this event. I bet it'll be decent. Those are really talented creators. If people are like, oh my gosh, you have to read Bloodhunt, I could be swayed. But at the moment, no. I'll wait. Does anybody else have any theories for Gambit that are not my theory? I'd like to hear something else. Let's see. Doesn't look like it. Doesn't look like it. Tevi asks, with X-Men 97 being a success, will this open the door for more Marvel animation, like return of old shows like EMH? I doubt something like an Avengers or Earth's Mightiest Heroes. I could see maybe the Spectacular Spider-Man, because that would also have the like canceled too soon, we're bringing it back kind of vibe, but they've already got Spidey plans they've announced, so I'd be surprised by that. I think if they're gonna bring anything back, it does seem most likely it will be in the 90s universe, because 97, and then they can do all the shared, because you got Fantastic Four in there, you got Spidey, you have Iron Man. You all remember the 90s Iron Man series? That had me asking a lot of questions growing up. Who are these people? Anybody who was ride or die for the Iron Man 90s series, you and I are truly, truly on, like, anybody can say they watched X-Men. LeBron James out here saying he watched X-Men in the 90s. Like, come on, that's casual stuff. You were watching Iron Man? Now we're talking deep nerd stuff. Okay. But yeah, I don't think they would. You know what I'd like them to bring back the most, actually, would be Pride of the X-Men. The weird one-off straight to home video where Wolverine has an inexplicable Australian accent. That was my favorite. I played that VHS tape until it was hot. Okay. Bring back Pride of the X-Men. That's what I want to see. All right. All those theme songs, Trap God Thanos says the Iron Man theme song hits. All of those theme songs rule. Every single one of them. Owen and I think, sang the Fantastic Four last week. Like, that, I'm not going to miss an opportunity to just sing the Fantastic Four one. I think the Iron Man's maybe the least memorable of the bunch. You got that Spider-Man Aerosmith riff. X-Men, obviously. X-Men's so good. That was like one of my first Popverse pieces, was talking to the writer of the song, being like, you wrote the best rock song of all time. He's like, do you have any questions? I'm like, no, I just wanted to tell you that. That's what I'm going to write. Okay, let's do it. Let's talk comics. Get in your questions. Get in your thoughts. A quick sip from our sponsor. Our sponsor today, we got a return of Big Water. Thanks to Big Water for sponsoring CBH Live. For, you know what? If they weren't sponsoring us, I suspect I would not have the guest hall that I have, honestly. I suspect I would not have it, but we do have Big Water. We got about a half full Hulk bottle today. It's going to be lukewarm. Get Big Water from a sink near you. Emmanuel says, Dave, don't forget about the 90s Incredible Hulk cartoon. You're right. That one is actually probably the least. I watched the least of the Hulk. I know of it. I watched some. I cannot claim true fandom. Okay. Like perhaps others. So that might be the limits of my fandom if you're a true Hulk diehard. All right. Let me know if anything weird happens on the stream now, because, again, trying something new today, we're going to see how this goes. Also, let me just take a lap. I called Bastion. I called Operation Zero Tolerance. The gift of prophecy works in mysterious ways. I never know when it's going to strike. But one thing I do know, if you follow Dave Stinney on Comic Book Herald Live, you will know more about what is coming than anyone else in any nerd sphere. Okay? Because I will predict stories to you well before they happen. Some people call this prophecy spoiler. My channel has been outed never for spoiling things without warning. comics we're going to talk about today may include some spoilers. If you're scared of that, please run now. But prophecy-based spoilers, where I call things too far in advance and people are like, you ruined the story for me because of your gifts. They're a curse for me too. I can't enjoy things the same way I used to with these abilities, right? I'm not sitting there like, oh, I wonder who it's going to be. Could it be Bastion? I knew years ago. Okay. So let me take a lap. Let's celebrate Destiny's prowess. Honestly, it's getting concerning. Like, I've been right so much lately, so much that I am starting to believe in myself. I am starting to think that maybe I'm actually decent at this. I'm going to need you all to keep me honest and highlight all of the times that I have been deeply, deeply wrong. Because otherwise, I am absolutely believing. Okay. All right. Rise of the Powers of 10. Number 4. We also had X-Men Forever. Number 2 out last week. Let's see. Today, there was an issue of X-Men. As long as I'm out here taking laps. As long as I'm out here taking laps. Justin writes, fine, Dave. You win. Didn't know we were competing, but thank you, Justin. As someone who genuinely likes most of what Jerry Duggan did for the Krakoa era, I desperately want From the Ashes to get here. Fall of X has overstayed its welcome. Happy now? I love that the Duggan heads. If you're a Duggan head and you're still listening, thank you so much for your support and for your show of good faith in being able to listen to someone who maybe doesn't like the same things as you in the same way. It takes a bigger person to be able to do that. It's the key to any relationship, is being able to admit when you're wrong. Right? To brag bodaciously when you're right, live in front of all your peers and friends, and to admit when you're wrong, right? Very, very key to any relationship. Thank you, Justin. Yeah, I mean, listen, there was no landing this plane. And I think that's been clear for months now. There was no landing this plane. In fact, the pilot has shot an optic blast through the roof and jumped out a while ago. Right? Like, the individual flying this Blackbird left the plane and said, screw it, I'm not doing this again. That's the Krakoa era right now. But what I want to say about X-Men today, the latest Jerry Duggan issue, is let's pour one out for Josh Cassara being awesome. Pour one out for Josh Cassara just killing it for an entire Krakoa era, whether it be X-Force, now X-Men. Pepe Larraz and Arby Silva and Marty Gracia, right, get, you know, their flowers and duly so for the work on House and Powers. But Josh Cassara was better, was more essential to the, like, Krakoa era experience, and is really, really fantastic. I'm looking forward to what comes next. I think if you're a creator, I don't know, like a Rom V, or like, you know, somebody who's just doing really cool creator-owned stuff, even a Hickman, right? Be dialing Josh Cassara's number, trying to get those pencils, right? Good stuff. Good stuff. Pour one out for Josh Cassara. And that's all I have to say about X-Men number 34. Okay, back to Rise and X-Men Forever. There was no landing this plane. It is, you know, it's disappointing to watch them put all the toys back systematically. It's a thing, you know, that is coming. But again, because of the speed of this, because of just the complete lack of support or interest in this era anymore from the top down, right? It's just now just this game of like, it's watching your, honestly, I'd say it's watching your kids clean up, but that would be more exciting because that means they listen to me and they're taking responsibility. So I can feel some pride in that as a parent and being like, look at my boys doing such a nice job cleaning up their mess. This is not as satisfying as that. Silva still has glimmers of magic, I think. He's not going to be on issue 5. So who cares? Like, that, when I saw that,
and I don't know if this is even true anymore. I saw this listed and it was like, yeah, Arby Silva doing 4 of 5 issues of Rise of the Powers of 10, but we cannot keep him for issue. Oh, it was Kieran Gillen's newsletter is where he said it's not going to be Silva on issue 5. It's just like, good grief, have they given up? They're done too. Everybody here is done. And I've been feeling that, and I've been saying that for months. And as a reader, listen, if the people making the thing are done, you don't have, your fandom does not insist that you invest as well. It's over. The Krakoa era ended with the win. When was the official ending? Do we go through Resurrection of Magneto? Do we give Al that? I think we could do that. Because it's either that or it's the end of Immortal and X-Men Red. Like, that's a nice time to hop out. I still, you know, am interested in just, like, big picture-wise, what was Gillen's thinking in terms of how he would wrap things and play this game in Rise. But the problem now is that in the effort to just, in the most hollow way, mirror the success and shared two series that are one-ness of House and Powers, you know, Rise has to, like, play with Fall. And Fall, like, I would rather fall off my roof than read more Fall. I would rather listen to nothing but the Fall, who I do like quite a lot, but never again anything else. I can only listen to the Fall and their influences on Pavement than read the Fall. I would rather it was only seasonally Fall, never again spring or summer or a nice Chicago winter. Absolute ecological havoc, complete endangered species wiped out seasonally, only Fall, then have to read the Fall. Like, it's not great. it's not great. Rise was pretty good. The Rise of Powers 4 and X-Men Forever 2 or when it listen, finally caught up with them, it's like, oh, okay. We're done here too. The big thing that happened between these issues, was the 5 stay behind in the white hot room. Okay. And they're going to resurrect all these mutants that died fighting Orcus. So, like, we're bringing back some mutants. Okay, we got to revive Mr. Sinister. He's helping. Okay. They're going to send them back to Earth through Mother Righteous-y plot machinations. But a lot of mutants, like a bunch, like the, you know, your D-listers, but, like, you know, supporting characters, people that made up the fabric of Krakoa being interesting, they're staying in this white hot room. So, like, it's got the feel, and it's kind of downplayed because everything is just fast and under-supported at this point. But, like, it's kind of giving the feel of, like, a Decimation 2.0, where you just have all these mutants who just are not coming back to life. And presumably, this is, like, editorially in line with what is desired for the next era, to have, like, mutants just have fewer in numbers. They're no longer a controlling power in the world. They're, you know, they're small again and discriminated against, and they're fighting back. They're a true minority, right? In the ways that I suppose they've often been perceived. I wasn't, like, hugely bothered by this in the moment, but it does. It's one of those things where I don't love it when stories are so clearly, like big plot is happening just to, like, support and sort of a financial or editorial mandate. You know, it's one of the problems you see a lot with DC with Crisis stuff now, especially, where it's like, you know, these books are talking so much about how many multiverses there are that it's like they forgot to tell a story. You know, you're so focused on resetting your DC encyclopedia listing that you forgot to tell a narrative. And that this has that energy in leaving all these mutants behind in the white hot room. Like, there's no emotion to that, you know, unless in two panels you're like super into this little mutant eating potatoes, which I kind of am. Right. I am glad. I don't know. What did you all think? Do you all feel like, oh, we're getting decimation again? And this kind of sucks, or are you unbothered by that? I don't really know what the temperature is on that. I am glad and not entirely surprised that Professor X is out here scheming and is not just wholly jumping the shark as an evil baddie, right? Like, yes, he killed Rachel, but it's, you know, it's part of a plan, and he's trying to get to the White Hot Room or get her to the White Hot Room so she can resurrect the Phoenix, which is, you know, kind of the inevitable conclusion to all this that we've all been talking about for years now. Yet it has none of the impact that, you know, I think we hoped it would. Back when we read that data page and saw Dominion's weak to Phoenixes, I bet that'll come up again. And now we're here and it's like, yeah, okay. Okay. But at least Professor X had a plan, I guess. I don't know. Is that any better? Not especially. He's still doing like heinous stuff, right? It's like murdering, you know, in the name of mutants. Killing in the name of. How much do you think Professor X loves Rage? Killing in the name of. I bet Professor X can't name a single Rage Against the Machine song. I would be willing to bet a lot of money that he could not, for the life of him, pick out a Tom Morello riff in a crowd. This is a man with untold psychic abilities, and I could be standing in front of him going, killing in the name of, and he still would not pick up off me. That was Rage Against the Machine. He would be like, is that a TikTok meme? I don't understand what's happening. There's no way he's familiar with Zach De La Rocha, with Tom Morello, with anyone from Rage, right? There are those who work forces, the same who burn crosses. He'd just be like, why are you doing freestyle poetry? Is this a beatnik thing? Oh, we have fun. Okay. I think that's it for X-Men. Do we have anything else to say about that? I like the sentence launching nice sentinels. That's the thing Nimrod says. That's a good sentence for Nimrod to say. Here's some RB Silva magic. He's still got it. He's still got it if he wants. Dow says Charlie looks more like a Yo-Yo Ma guy. Yeah, for sure. Right, classical, doesn't have a Spotify account, you know, still just plays his vinyls of Yo-Yo Ma and Mozart and Beethoven. What's like the edgiest thing that Professor X likes? Like, will he get down to rumors? Not like slanderous gossip, like the Fleetwood Mac album. Like, is he like Magneto, like gets him a glass of red wine, throws a little Stevie on the speakers, and Professor X gets loose? You let me know. You tell me. What's the edgiest thing? Tevye says Professor X likes heavy metal. This would make me respect him more. Definitely. I would be a lot more into Professor X if he was like, have you heard the newest Mastodon record? What do you think about Baroness? I listened to Mayhem this week for the first time, because that is apparently one of Brian Azzarello's favorite bands. Learned that in an interview with the individual. Norwegian black metal. I didn't love it, but it washed over me for a day. If Professor X was like super into Norwegian black metal, that'd be a nice wrinkle. You could write that into his character. I swear I'm not struggling for things to talk about. This is just what interests me. Okay. Final questions, final thoughts. Mr. Dr. Evil Porkchop asks a very important question, which is, what is Charlie's birth year canonically? I have no idea at this point. I think all the World War II stuff. Well, how do you have Magneto still in the Holocaust, but then he and Charlie, when did they met in what, Korea? Vietnam? If it's Vietnam, then Charlie's in his 70s. That no one, listen, I said this before, nobody has a beard that blonde without any white who's in their 70s. Not without a lot of dye. Okay, but I think the Marvel Universe is still, like, isn't Tony Stark's origin now? What? Oh, no, they updated it to the Iraq War. That's right. But I don't know that they've ever really touched that with Professor X and Magneto. I mean, here's the horrible truth about the world, is it's very easy to find a war to move them to. Because people keep making horrible decisions. You know, so you want to play that sliding time scale game. Probably ain't as hard as you'd like. Gods. Number 7 came out last week. We'll go in order. Immortal Thor, number 10. We're back from the world of Chad Hammer. Al Ewing is writing a Thor who can only think in banter and tired cliches. Like, that's going to leave a mark. And he's behind me, isn't he? Again, enjoyed him poking fun at that. It felt a lot like Al taking shots at MCU Thor, probably Love and Thunder specifically. He still kind of has that punk rock energy of like, how is he getting away with this from within the walls of Disney? You know, it's still kind of there. I like the meta-ness of it. We're 10 issues into Immortal Thor. And it's not a banger. It's interesting. It's nice. I like Magno on this book a lot, actually. I like Carlo Magno's stuff. Listen, Enchantress using the magic of a parody comic of Thor to fight him is an awesome idea. It really is. And like writing a parody of all the ways that you don't like this character having been written is metatextually an interesting exercise. But I don't think it's as insightful and scathing and frankly funny as maybe Al wants it to be. Or maybe it needs to be to pull it off. And again, it's that thing of like, the call is coming from inside the house. Like, if it's a creator-owned thing and you're just letting loose on the flaws of the big two, like, there's a, you know, it's the whole, what's the Pat Mills one? Gets lumped in with Watchmen a bunch. I think Kevin O'Neill's on it. Oh, what's that called? What's that book? You know the one. Pat Mills, Kevin O'Neill, Watchmen era, late 80s. I want to say it's like, damn it. I don't even like it that much, but I know it's influential. Anyway, the point being, create your own stuff. You can just go in. You can just go in on stuff, unsheathed. And it's like Ewing's kind of like, I don't know, he's poking at Marvel with a wooden sword, like with a play weapon. It's like, I bet if you get Al, somebody who knows this industry and these types of books as well as he must at this point, you know, it could probably be a lot more interesting, a lot more savage. Martial law. Thank you, Emmanuel. That's the one. But yeah, Immortal Thor's in a weird place. It's just, I don't know. Like, again, the bar is Immortal Hulk. We're 10 issues in. It's well below that bar. It's not even touching that bar. You know, so I think it's not, people are often bothered by high standards. And those are the standards that are set by Al himself and by the title. And it's not there. Maybe it'll get there. Again, it's still one of Marvel's most interesting comics. But it doesn't have the magic, ironically. Look at that cover. You could almost forget that this era... Oh, Josh Cassara. That upside down Professor X with Omega Sentinel too. Oh, Wolvie in the Rain from Cassara. Come on. That's that stuff. God's thoughts real quick before we wrap. Getting your final questions, getting your final thoughts. The last couple issues are the best of the book. And it is kind of a shame that going into eight issues and now it being done at eight, it's like clearly peaking late. But it's not, you know, I think one of the arguments against criticizing it early was like, oh, it's Hickman, you know, he'll build and it'll be worth it. It's not actually better because it's like built something. I mean, a little bit in the sense of like, we know who the characters are, you know, and you don't have to do quite as much exposition, but it's not like there was significant build early in Gods that is now paying off in some fantastic way. I just really like the approach he's taken the last couple issues of like honing in on two of these new characters, going through their individual stories, and telling just some nice comics as a result. They weren't good enough that I'd like miss the, that I'll miss the book. I will not. But you can finally see some of the potential, I guess, a little bit. I mean, I got to say, I am surprised in that if Gods came back, right, if this was season one, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's only season one, it's eight issues, you know, we'll do a season two, I would not read it. I wouldn't. We got a lot of material here to base that opinion on. And it's just this book just never had it. It just never had the juice. I think part of that is a problem of its own making, where it was like, this is, you know, there were two Bibles and one was House of X and this was the other one. And this is Hickman's vision for Marvel Cosmic. And it just was never that book. You know, like we're seven issues into eight. What did we get for the Marvel Cosmic universe? We got one, maybe two things. We got a cool Living Tribunal design. We got a reimagined in-betweener. Oh, and I guess he added Oblivion to the mix. Like, this book did not deliver. Even the folks here who are saying they kind of liked it. JJ says, it is interesting but boring. Banksy, this issue was pretty boring. I've been a fan, though. Like, yeah, it's boring. It's a boring comic. Do you know what you don't want to be when you're a Marvel comic? Boring. Let's see. Groose has said, we have to talk about Wolverine's last issue. Groose, it's all you. Get in your thoughts. What do the people need to know? Share them here, and I will share them. All right, I'm going to take one more swig. Get in your final thoughts, and we'll wrap it up. Tevi says, you don't want to be boring or rage-baiting like Amazing Spider-Man. I would rather read a rage-baiting Marvel comic by far than a boring Marvel comic. There are way more boring ones. All right. Thank you all for listening. Appreciate you being here today. Again, tomorrow, circa 2 Central, I'm going to be here live talking to Brian Michael Bendis and artist Andre Lee Morejo. We talk Phenomena. We're going to talk Marvel. You know what my big question for Brian is? I got to ask him. We're doing Civil War in the Marvel Comics. And I want to ask him from his perspective, because that's a Mark Miller book, right? It's the rare non-Bendis event in the middle of the era of Bendis events. I want to know, what were his thoughts? What were his secret dark truths about the time of Civil War? Thank you all for being here. Much appreciated. Again, we're going to be here tomorrow. We'll be back next week. I got guests galore this month. So like, subscribe, share, comment, all that fun stuff on the channel, and you'll be able to hang. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy the comics.